Blog Talk Radio.
We are having internet issues here in Los Angeles. I cannot get a domain name server, so I cannot utilize or access my portal. This has been going on for about 15 to 20 minutes. It may be due to the wind. We have severe wind and it's very cold, but the wind will move and has a tendency to knock out the cell phone towers in our area. Hopefully that's all it is. I am trying to patch in, but it is what it is. Not only is the government shut down, you and I may be too. So we'll have to work at it. Because in fact, I believe that is the core issue. I can't even get a website on my phone, let alone the computer. So that's probably what it's about. I have no other way of dealing with this other than what it is. It was not an issue maybe 30, 40 minutes ago, but it's now an issue as the wind has picked up. So it is what it is, and we'll try everything possible to move around this. I am very proficient at computering, having been a computer teacher and technician for years, but it can only do what it can do. So that is the situation, and that is why I was delayed in getting on the air, and that may delay us from having a show today. Other than that, I hope all is well with you and you are not adversely affected by this government shutdown. I'm working on something as I speak and it didn't work. Let me try something else real quickly. No, it's not working. I tried to use another phone and patch. There's no internet access. And that has more to do with the phone company and the phone signal in the towers. It has that little or nothing to do with me. So that's where it is. I can keep running my mouth, of course, and backdoor a production, which may be my only real opportunity to broadcast. Hopefully, we can get this resolved so that we can be back up and running. Certainly, by tomorrow. And this, like I said, this just happened. This was not an issue earlier today. And things happen, you know. And I certainly do not think it's the computer. It's more or less the connection. Yes, I do have Wi-Fi. I just cannot connect to the internet server. So one thing I resolved is that there is, yes, my DNS server is not available. And that's the server from my phone company. So with that, I will do the following. Because I, want to broadcast as much as I can. Yeah, this is purely the phone issue. It has nothing to do with me. Now, yes, it's down, and it's weather-related. Oh, well. We have Dr. Joy DeGruy.
Thank you so much. I want to always honor those who have given, and of course you have been my support through a war as it relates to this issue. I really do believe you have my back, and I will no doubt need you to have my back. So with that, I'd like to share with you just a part of you. Some of you are, this is the first time you're hearing about post-night slave syndrome. Okay. I know that a lot of information has been put out there about a lot of different things, but what I'm saying is not really a new thing. It is something that we have known for a long time. That's why it resonates when I speak about it. It resonates in your heart. Before you understand any of the terms or the words, it resonates in your heart. When I speak to African Americans about this, it doesn't matter who they are, how old they are. It doesn't matter where they're from, what class level they have, whatever it is. They go, yes. Yes, that's true. Of course, when I talk to white people about know that there's a difference. But it is a legacy that we share. It is something that we know. It is something that's been strangely apparent, but made to be a secret. So what I basically did was I took a look at what was going on around me, and I began to question what I saw going on around me. So one of the things that I wanted to do is kind of start where I started. How did I get here, and why did I start looking at this in the first place? Where did it come from? Well, it started off with people asking about, you know, diversity training. You know, it's, again, something that the world began to realize it needed for some reason, some diversity training. But that really came out of another experience, and it came out of people that were coming to the United States that weren't happy with the way they were being treated. The first thing I started to realize, and I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, and I always say that I believe that does deserve an applause. And part of what happened to me when I grew up in Los Angeles is I grew up, you know, really being exposed, not like New York, you know, because you all have Ellis Island. You know, you have people that came to Ellis Island. Well, not everybody came to Ellis Island. But you all had folks that came to Ellis Island, you know, and this is the place, you know, send us your tour, your Hubbard Master Journey to the city. But in LA, you know, you had folks, I was used to hearing lots of different languages and this sort of thing. And then I decided that I needed to move from Los Angeles. It was becoming too Hollywood, too material, and I didn't want my children to grow up in that. So I moved to Portland, which was a scary thing to do. Because, you know, there was like, I was hoping I was moving to Portland, and I go, really, are there black people there? There's black people in Portland. You wouldn't stay for all the days, but they were So, you know, I moved to Portland, and it was a very unusual experience. And I'll tell you why. It was unusual because, first of all, something happened there that I had never experienced in my life. And the first thing I experienced was something called the possum incident. The possum incident. Now, this was a thing that I'd never seen before. I, you know, I had never really seen this before. But what occurred was some two police officers decided to take a dead possum and throw it into the doorway of a local black restaurant as a joke, right? And so they were reprimanded, slapped on the hand, and given, you know, vacations with pay for that. But I was like, man, that sounds like something coming out of the Annabelle Cloud. That's outrageous. And the next incident that occurred wasn't so innocuous. It involved an off-duty security guard, an African-American man. He entered a 7-Eleven. Y'all have 7-Eleven here, right? Entered a 7-Eleven. And he was getting some snacks for the kids. He wasn't on, you know, he was just basically minding his own business. But there was a robbery involved, right? So the clerk, who was a young white male, was terrified, so fast. And he motioned to him to hit the button so that the police would come, and he actually grabbed him. This gentleman that was robbing the store, another young white male, and had him holding him by the neck. So the young clerk had called the police, and the moment, four police cars converged. They see this real big black man holding on to this white man in the front of the store. So they assume that the black man is the one who robbed the store, so they attacked him. The white man ran off and was never seen again. So what they did was during this time it was popular to use what was known as a carotid pulse, which apparently stopped the oxygen to the brain, not throughout. This is what they did to students. And the law says that if after 4 minutes you don't come to naturally, that you have to apply mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And of course, in 4 minutes, he or she did not come to, and he died that day. And so there was a huge outcry from the community, largely the African-American community, that said, you know, we're demanding justice. And so there, what would happen was mandatory training for all police officers was important. That was part of the settlement. And I was among the first to be a part of that training. 750 Portland police officers. And after training 750 Portland police officers, I knew there was no one I couldn't train. They had done. And so one of the things that happened during that time is I realized that you know, first of all, they followed me to do the training. You know, I thought kids must really like me. But what happened was the black man that they had hired quit. So, you know, they called me in, and I'm thinking, all right, I thought they liked me, but it was just by default that I got called in. So I started to take a closer look, and I wanted to get more specifically at why it is we seem to have this conversation about race. Matter of fact, that a lot of people don't want to have the conversation about race. They go, you know, I don't, you know, have this to move on. There's, you know. And it, so usually what happens to me is I start off workshops, because I know that people enter this discussion at different levels. You know, I want you to talk to all of people. You got people that are coming in at varying levels of the discussion. You have people that are coming in at the level of, is this still racism? Aren't we doing better now? And that's called Race Awareness 101. And I'm not mad at it. You know, I just don't. I used to teach race relations 101. I don't teach it anymore. There's no time. But they show up. They're not bad. They're just they need a prerequisite to be in my course. But they show up anyway because, you know, after all, there is not how much more that I know than them. So they show up. And then you have the person that comes in and says, I want reparations. And that's it. That's it. And I'm trying to keep everybody alive in that room. So what I'm saying is it is a difficult discussion to bring one alive at a different level of understanding of the conversation. Now, people of color, people of color, enter the room at the 600 level. Having attended no school, they entered this conversation at the 600 level. And so the difficulty is balancing that out. So I always start with a test question. Just to get a temperature, just a temperature guide on what everybody is. So I ask people if they understand what racism is. So I'm going to ask the audience, do you understand what racism is? So I'm going to ask, okay, you know, pieces of the professor. So I'm going to ask you this question, can white people be racist? So I'm going to ask, okay. Can black people be racist? Show of hands. Absolutely. Show of hands. Okay, thank you. Now what I want you to do is we're going to basically do a little research. I want you to consider two columns. The first column is called white racism. And I want you to name some of the things that are representative of white racism. In other words, how does white racism adversely impact the lives of black people? What are some of those ways that white racism adversely impacts? Housing, jobs, health care, profiling as it relates to justice, criminal justice. Right. Okay, so if I were to continue to ask you, we would have a nice little list. That's okay. Now we're going to move to the next category. How does black racism adversely impact the lives of white people? Let me get clear. I just want an answer. Answer not. Black racism adversely impact the lives of white people as a group. Okay, here comes the problem. Okay, here lies the problem. And I'll tell you the answer that I normally get and I'm going to speak to it. Okay, here. Now, I want you to stay there because at first I didn't want to own that. But it's true. But we need to find out why. The theory, but the reason why we couldn't fill in the other blanks is because racism implies power. I might hate somebody, white, and say, I hate them, white. It's not the same, you being able to get that love. It's not going to impact your ability to get the home base of your choice. It implies not an ability to just dislike a group, but the power to impact them with that dislike. So that's what racism implies. And yes, there were a fair number of things that are over. And there's a part of it, and I understand we can be prejudiced, but to be racist means you can take that prejudice and you can impact the lives of the whole group. And even when we look at fear, that doesn't happen to the whole group. So what I'm saying is that racism implies power, but the fact that that question ends up with different answers regardless of race says to me we need to continue to have this discussion so that we can understand how we arrived at where we are and how it is that we don't understand it. So then we started to take a look at behavior. I had an opportunity, as you all know, many of you know, to go to South Africa. My sister eventually moved to South Africa. And during that time, I was wanting to really get a feel for normal around black people. And that's what South Africa is a sense of normal. But I went in 1994 to South Africa at a point when blood was still running in the streets of Johannesburg as a result of the, you know, inauguration of Nelson Mandela. That was a deep time in the country. And I knew that when I was getting ready to leave, that I was probably going to encounter some negativity. I was going to be a little negativity when I got to South Africa. You know, here I'm African American, and Mandela's the new president. And, you know, these folks might have been a little testy about that. So I was, you know, kind of prepared. Matter of fact, I'm going to say I had attitude. They always talk about that. You know, we're always. We want to have that attitude. We want to have attitude. We're aggressive, right? And intimidating. Right? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm gonna go over there. And I'm like, but I'm preparing for people to, you know, kind of have an attitude. He was tip on my shoulder. My husband was not happy with me going at that time. But you know, I was traveling with eight other African American women. So when we arrived, you know, it was just a tough time. And I was waiting to have that experience.
Own it. They had to say, I'm sorry for the world for apartheid.
They had to say, I'm sorry to the entire world. And they did. They owned it. They said, we're sorry. Please come back and bring the money. The South Africa owned it.
Again, folks, we are having internet connection issues, probably due to the high winds here in Southern California just started, which is affecting my ability to access the Blog Talk Radio portal and my individual portal. So hopefully it'll be corrected sooner rather than later. But for now, we're going to log off. All right, folks, it looks as if we resolved one problem and did get our internet connection back, but I had to restart everything, and that basically means I have to reset up the website, and so that's going to take a couple of seconds. Before I can get there. But it is what it is. At least we have, yes, I'm fully back on the web. Thank God I have the knowledge to know how to troubleshoot computers, servers. I learned this because I used to have to run it was Oakland Unified School District's first technology center at a elementary school. We had the biggest, largest facility. And the interesting thing is when I got there, I think that was around 1993 or 2, they had hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of computers in a room. And I just stumbled across the room and I was like, why aren't the children using these computers? The vice principal says, I hate to even inform you, but no one here knows how to turn them on or use them. Are you serious? Yeah, he said, if you can get them to work and network this, it took 1 week and I had it all. I said, give me all of the, I said, let's open one box, the biggest computer you got. Give me all of the, manuals, and this is when we were first going into Apple computing, so we had your early Apple computers, and we just moved away from the Apple IIe, I believe, and moving into other mainframes. So I took the information home, thoroughly consumed it, figured out what the issues were with regard to how to turn the computers on and get everything going. The next day I talked to a friend who was a teacher there, asked him if he had some insight in terms of how we could get this thing up and going, because he was excited about having his children use the computers. And from there, he brought in some technicians that actually even further increased my learning curve and gave me some specific directions in terms of how to program and get inside the drives and set up the network. It took a week and a half, and we had computers up and running, and that type of knowledge has allowed me to troubleshoot here at home in any computer. Or computing type problems. So it is what it is. Having said all that, my original direction with the show has actually been kind of tapered because I'm into something of a technical nature and trying to deal with it. So we're just piecemealing this together today. Don't get too excited. Don't get too upset piecing things together because we had a computer issue earlier. Now, the funny thing about all of this is at midnight last night, or early this morning, my internet connection phone bill was due, and based on the text message, they got their money. I already know that. So it's funny how from time to time, you just run into issues. I mean, it's, if you live long enough, you're going to have to deal with some type of adversity. And if you live right long enough, you'll figure out how to get beyond the adversity. So I think that if nothing else, for me, these little setbacks, again, show us why we've been able to keep our show going. And now while I have a clear mind moment, I just informed Mike's performance exhaust and muffler that we are going to bring back our local advertising, because the city of Los Angeles regularly advertises, and they just, on my last Marty Smith show, had a message to the citizens of Los Angeles. They know that I reach a certain population and segment of people. Everybody knows that pays attention to the show and the development of the show. I'm one of the few people in the nation that's doing what I am doing. Okay? Simple as that. Right here in the hood. I'm one of the few people in the nation that is doing the type of broadcasting and putting out community information. Whether you like the information or not, I tend to try to cover all sides of the information, because I have come to the conclusion that there is no right or wrong side in any of this stuff anymore. It's just a search and quest for the truth. Now, this is the first day of the government shutdown, and I just noticed some things. When I got over by 77th Precinct, they had the whole street blocked off so that you couldn't drive down. I don't know if that's because of the protests in L.A. We have the women's protests, which is the anniversary of the women's protests that kicked off in Washington, D.C. and around the nation 1 year ago today, which was the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, President 45 of America. But the interesting thing is, the irony that 1 year to the day after this president has pretty much performed an assault on our nation and our Constitution and our democracy, it's now shut down. Now, here's the thing, folks. This shutdown may last a little longer than the one you experienced in, I think, 2013 with Barack Obama. Because whether you believe it or know it, there's only one or two parties to blame for this. You had no presidential leadership. Could have been avoided had he not been falsely trying to negotiate with a forked tongue. Earlier in the week, if they bring me something to sign, I'll sign it. He rejected that. Because the issues in the shutdown are affected by his lack of leadership or positioning on certain issues, whether it be DACA, or immigration, or DACA and immigration, or immigration and DACA. he is probably most to blame. I applaud Senator Chuck Schumer for trying to create some type of possible negotiations. But then again, I would also curse Chuck Schumer, because any wise person knows that you cannot negotiate with somebody who negotiates in bad faith. You cannot negotiate with the devil. You cannot negotiate with someone who is not in control of the negotiation, i.e., General Kelly is in the room undermining the president's ability to negotiate. But this was all set up by this White House. Another person I would lay blame on is the leadership of the House and the Republican Senate. They control both parties. They don't need Democratic votes to pass whatever. They've already shown this. And now we want to act as if we're going to be bipartisan for this issue? No, not at all. Now, some could easily just go there. Why would any American shut down their government and the processes of democracy for people who are not even American citizens? That's a legitimate debate and argument. However, it's not that simple, because this particular argument and fight seems to have been started because of the anger toward your first African-American president and the willy-nilly nature of President Trump's willingness to undermine anything that Obama had done without proper thought and thesis and analysis of outcomes. Not everything that Obama did was negative, obviously, and not everything that Donald Trump will do will be negative. But if the immediate aspects are nothing more than ignorance, anger, and negativity, it is what it is, ain't it? And acting as if it isn't that, oh, that just puts you back in the ghetto mentality where you can't trust your own homie.
It's this motherfucker, G.
No, man, I can't fuck with it right now.
Oh, man, I've been dealing with you for 3 motherfucking months. You ain't hit the pipe in front of me yet.
So what you saying?
I thank you, 5-0.
5-0. Man, I ain't no motherfucking cop.
Well, hit this motherfucker then.
Tonight, I get in some shit.
Yeah.
Deep cover on the incognito tip. Killing motherfuckers if I have to. Filling gaps too. Let your niggas know I'm coming at you. I guess that's part of the game. But I'm still for the nigga who think he just gon' come and change things with the swiftness. So get it right with the quickness and let me handle my business. Yo, I'm on a mission and my mission won't stop until I get the nigga maxing at the top.
I hope you get his ass before he drop.
King Ben kicking back while his workers play his rock. Coming up like a fat rat. Big money, big balls, big bodyguards on his back. So it's difficult to get him.
But I got the hooker with somebody who knows how to get in contact with him.
Hit him like this and like that. Let him know that I'm looking for a big fat dope sack. What is the spin, so let's brush it. If you wanna handle it tonight, we'll discuss it. On a nigga's time and a nigga's place. Take my strap just in case one of his boys recognize my face. Cause he's a shiesty motherfucker. But I give a fuck, cause I'm going deep cover. Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover car.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover car. Creep with me as I crawl through the hood. Maniac lunatic calling Snoop Eastwood. Kicking dust as I bust fuck Pete and the motherfucking truck police. You already know I give a fuck about a cop. So why in the fuck would you think that it would stop? plot. Yeah, that's what we's about to do. Take your ass on a mission with the boys in blue. Dre,
what up, Snoop?
Yo, I got the feeling. Tonight's the night like Betty Wright, and I'm chilling, killing, feeling. No remorse, yeah. So let's go straight to the motherfucking source and see what we can find. Crooked ass cops that be getting niggas a gang of time. And now they wanna make a deal with me. Scoop me up and put me on their team and chill with me. And make my pockets bigger. They wanna meet with me tonight at 7 o'clock.
So what's up, nigga?
What you wanna do?
What you wanna do?
I got the gauge of Uzi and my motherfucking 22. So if you wanna blast, nigga, we can buck them. If we sick them, then we suck them. So fuck.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop. 6:05 was the time on the clock when me and my homie bailed in the parking lot. The scene looked strange and it felt like a setup.
Bet not be, cause if it is, they get lit up.
Oh, here they come from the back and they lack. I'm checking for the gas, they slap. So what's up, Black?
Chill, let's hit a deal. If it ain't up to what you feel, then grab your steel.
Right, so, what you motherfuckers gon' come at me with? Hope you ain't wanting none of my grip, cause you can say that shit.
Guess what they told me?
We give you 20 G's if you snitch on your homie. We'll put you in a home and make your life plush. Oh yeah, but you gotta sell dope for us. Let me think about it. Turn my back and grab my gat, and guess what I told him before I shot it? If you don't quit, yeah. If you don't stop, yeah, I'm letting my gat pop. Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover cop.
Yeah, and you don't stop.
Cause it's 187 on an undercover.
Now, even though I corrected one problem, I'm still having some internet issues. And I think, again, when we get high winds and the cell phone towers here around South LA, this always occurs. Inclement weather has become more of a problem for accessing the web in the last 2.5 years than it's ever been. And used to didn't matter. But now, this type of stuff will set you back. So, you know, we live, we learn. It is what it is. I'm not complaining as much as I am explaining. So, and because the reality is the show has become even more and more popular and people are relying on it, that I have to take the time to let you folks know. I had informed one of my good friends over at Mike's Performance Auto that I was going to put the advertising back together, the package, and do local advertising again. We haven't done it for over a year now, until about a week or two ago, where I gave a shout out to a local plumber and refrigerator technician, Paco, between Vermont and Hoover on Manchester 900. I think 930, something like that, on the north side of the street. Then I noticed the interest picked back up. And I'm all for the advertising, but, you know, I'm not trying to necessarily be hamstrung by it or create a scenario where I have to rely on it to produce my shows. That was one of the downsides. But we are slowly going to bring this back, because it's important, and I've dealt with quite a few businesses just this week. Alfredo's Welding Company, 7401 Broadway, on 74th and Broadway. Exceptional welder. They're doing big work. They actually, if you have been trying to motivate GRX and his wife to just break wide and get their catering business together. And lo and behold, I was over at Alfredo's about 3 days ago, and they're sitting there working on catering trucks, doing all kind of welding and bringing the trucks up to standard, and so that you have not just security on the truck, but they can even put together counters. I mean, just stainless steel work. It was excellent. Wrought iron work. And then I just happened to just float through there. I've seen them. I see them every day. But I just float through there, and they asked me to relieve them of quite a bit of metal, and as well as cardboard. And so everything on that street is connected through a couple of people who work in that area. And I've known these folks for, you know, but wow. In the case of Manny, who controls these properties, I'd say since 2002 or one or two, when I met Manny, I met him at the same time I met Brother Cliff, my Belizean brother, who's also my Masonic frat brother. So, you know, I have history in that area, as well as I went to elementary and junior high over there. But I just found it interesting. So I just like, you know what, guys? Because you guys helped me out and blessed me, I'm going to bring back the advertising, and I think it would be appropriate. So I let my people over at Mike's Performance Exhaust and Auto, I don't even know why I keep calling it that. They should just change the name to Mike's Full Service Auto, because that's what they're doing. In the 4 years I've known them, that operation has grown to now from just mufflers and exhaust and radiators to they can do full auto restoration. They have a worker over there named Miguel. The work that he's doing, I have not seen nothing like this up close since my stepdaddy was on my street doing the same type of work in the 70s, early 70s, and through the mid-80s. I ain't seen nothing like this, which is complete restorations on classic vehicles, totally stripped, totally repainted, totally re-electronized. I mean, he did everything textbook. I'm like, bro, if people knew that you could do what you're doing and the patience and the time you're taking. And then having talked to him, and I do have quite a bit of photography from the project. The project's not done yet, but I'm like, man, this is just excellent. The complete restoration of a classic Chevy station wagon back to its factory cobalt blue. And I just found it interesting to see this type of work. Now, this particular mechanic, Miguel, he has a backyard full of classic vehicles. He's like me, man. We start talking about old Swin classic bikes. Like, yep, I got those too. Like, man, I had a whole backyard full. I don't have as many as I did, but I know something about it. And I'm, you know, I love classics. Everything I got is classic. I'm becoming my own classic. This show is classic. But it is what it is. So I told him that I would bring the advertising back. And the city of Los Angeles got out before me and started right before I could start. And that's okay. Again, everybody knows me, and I've worked for everybody and everybody up and down the state. So you kind of have to be careful. And I've always said this to all of these haters. You get yourself caught up real quick if you don't know what time it is with me. Still waiting for these sites to come up fully. Still don't have full power, but I am on and everything's working. And I see the computer trying to respond. So, and I'm in my portal. I may go the full distance with this show. I may not. I haven't decided yet. I'm actually trying to do something in the background because I don't waste time, and even though the site was having some issues, I'm trying to upload some things on the site in the downtime because I got shows to do all the way through the Super Bowl and beyond. So once I made a decision on myself, it was easy for me to accept the quitting of everybody else around me. Something I expected because all of my life, this has been the case with so-called friends, family, and homies. They are never in it for the long haul. Could it be the vision? Maybe. Could it be a lack of insight? Maybe. Could it be just basic hate? Probably as well. But the beauty is I'm back on the web, back in the portal of Blog Talk Radio, but nothing's working in my portal. I can't get a song to play, none of that. none of that's working. But my website signal is there. My Wi-Fi signal doesn't have the little yellow fan on it anymore. I'm fully powered. I'm geeked and I'm fired up. All I want to do is just get high up. I got to light this blunty. Because that's the only thing keeping us together today. The blunty, as well as dilly. You know, for many of you folks, this shutdown is going to put you in the pit of misery. It's unfortunate that you will be in the pit of misery because of the government shutdown. But again, before you go ballistic with your anger, who is most to blame for this? DACA didn't even have to be an issue, but President Trump rescinded it and gave Congress till March to come up with a plan and then balked on everything he said since that time. If you ask me and you're my boss to come up with a plan and I come up with one, then you say it publicly, whatever you come up with, Marty, you and your foes, your counterpart, I will approve. And then you don't? Oh, man, you know what, folks? Hey, white man speak with forked tongue. Cannot trust. White man speak with forked tongue. Then again, I digress. Because there's something to say about where we are now. All men speak with forked tongue. All men are distrustful. We should move from dilly to really. Because this is really what it's about. Discombobulation. This did not start with Professor Trump or Dr. Obama. It started, as far as I can be concerned, and remember from my memory, I saw it through Nixon. Less with Ford because he was not that smart or competent. Ford was having a lot of issues like standing up straight and not being knocked over or falling down. President Ford had a whole bunch of issues. But I also saw this in the Carter administration, particularly when we got to the end of replacing him with Reagan. And a lot of folks don't realize that the Republicans replace Democratic Jimmy Carter presidency by aligning themselves with Iranian hostage takers, because the hostage takers that they said they were not going to release, these people had been held captive about a year or two, not longer, to President Carter, but would release them to the Republican administration if they won. And then a debacled attempt in which the Carter administration attempt to rescue them in the desert, it failed, and the Carter administration was not forthright about that operation or the aftermath of the operation. So you had a whole bunch of you just had a headache at the end of the Carter administration, as well as moving into oil and gas games. Carter was getting the spike at some of the highest gas that we had ever seen. You got to understand that back then, you know, 25, 35 cents a gallon, that would be like where it was. I think people went crazy when the gas got up to about 70 cents, 80 cents a gallon, damn near a dollar. There were literally lines for folks who can remember. If you had to be getting gas on, let's say, for instance, Vermont and Manchester, that line might have went a half mile to a mile in either direction. I remember seeing this. People, y'all remember this. And a lot of where we are has been the back and forth slings and arrows of administrations and parties catering to one freedom fighter that ends up being, now we are at war with them because of their terrorism, against another. But this is as old as the history of the Americans. The bad light that people always try to shed on Haiti has a lot to do with the dissonance and their upheaval of the slave trade and the inability, once free from a slave psychology, to still control the slave.
Thank you. Democratic side to negotiate a final deal for the American people, Republicans in Congress plunged headfirst into the Trump shutdown. How'd we get here? Why is it that Republicans and President Trump are unwilling to do the jobs they were elected to do and reach an agreement to fund the military, critical programs for the middle class, address DACA, fund children's health, and take care of disaster aid? Over the last several months, Democrats have bent over backward to negotiate with the White House. Unfortunately, the president and Republican leaders in Congress are like Abbott and Costello. The congressional leaders tell me to negotiate with President Trump. President Trump tells me to figure it out with Republican leaders. Let me talk a little bit about what transpired in negotiations. First, a little history. Last year, when President Trump ended the DACA program, we immediately began working on a solution that both sides could agree to. Leader Pelosi and I went to dinner with the president. We came away with an agreement to pursue a deal pursuing the DACA Act with border security. The president agreed. But that night and the next morning, the hard right came after him. Breitbart calls him Amnesty Trump. Laura Ingraham even insisted he be impeached. By the weekend, he had backed off. Then Congress went to work. In a bipartisan way, Senators Durbin and Graham and their four compatriots worked hard to deliver a bipartisan deal. 2 weeks ago, the president had a meeting on national television for the world to see. He said he wanted four things: protect the dreamers, secure the border, end what he calls chain migration, and end the diversity visa lottery. And then he said he'd sign what Congress would come up with. Well, the bipartisan gang of six delivered. When the president heard about the contours of the deal on the phone with Senator Durbin, he was thrilled. He invited Senators Durbin and Graham to the White House, but the hard right attacked again. A meeting that could have ended in a bipartisan handshake instead devolved into the one of the most infamous meetings of his presidency. But still, we went back to work. Excuse me, I have a cold. But still, we went back to work to strike a deal with the president. Yesterday, I talked to the president in the morning. We were not far apart on the issues. A deal to fund military and critical programs for the middle class can be struck, agreed to the contours of that deal. An immigration deal was in reach. We could address children's health insurance, other health issues, disaster aid. We went to the meeting and had a long and productive discussion. I told the president we Democrats were willing to fund the military at the highest levels in history, far above even his budget request. I reluctantly put his wall request for the southern border on the table. It was his request. We left the meeting having agreed to try for a short-term CR that would keep everyone at the negotiating table for a few more days. The president suggested, let's do it by Tuesday night. We said, great. Several hours later, he called back. He said, so I hear we have a three-week deal. I said, no, Mr. President, no one's even talked to me about a three-week deal. I heard that's the deal. I said, no one's talked to me. I called Leader Pelosi, no one had talked to her. Then, a few hours later, they called back again. Well, we're going to need this in addition. Things, it was General Kelly, that they knew were far, far right and off the table. Now, the lunch that seemed so promising was quickly overtaken by hard right forces in the administration, even though we bent over backwards to meet the president's demands. Negotiating with this White House is like negotiating with Jell-O. It's next to impossible. As soon as you take one step forward, the hard right forces the president three steps back. Now, I want to say, I don't have the personal animus that a lot of my colleagues have towards the president. We're both blunt and direct. I agree with him vehemently on just about every issue, but at least we can talk to one another. But it's next to impossible to strike a deal with the president because he can't stick to the terms. I have found this out. Leader McConnell has found this out. Speaker Ryan has found this out. So here we are on the first anniversary of the president's inauguration, mired in the Trump shutdown. It doesn't have to be this way. We can get big things done. We can fund the military at the highest level ever. We can commit unprecedented resources to the fight against opioids, to our veterans, to pension plans that are drying up. We can protect our southern border and protect young Americans who were brought here as children. We can pass children's health insurance And I've never seen something so cynical as Republicans pitting groups of children against each other. They hold up Chip to hold other children, each time the DACA kids, hostage. That's a disgrace. That's not what America wants. We can also pass disaster aid, which California, Florida, and Puerto Rico want. We can do big things, but the president needs to step up and lead. The Republicans control the presidency, the Senate, the House. They know who's responsible. The American people know that the Republicans control the presidency, the Senate, and the House, and they know who's responsible. America knows this is the Trump shutdown. Only the president can end it. We Democrats are at the table. We're ready to negotiate. The president needs to pull up a chair to end this shutdown. Ready for your questions.
Do you find what you mean by when you say you put the wall on the table?
Yeah. Okay. This was not my, I'm not going to get into the specific numbers, but I will tell you it was the president who suggested the number, and I said, let's put it on the table. On Twitter, he's leading 10 to 1. Okay, I don't care. Yeah. Well, look, this is the third or fourth time on this issue he's made some kind of commitment and then backed off because he's afraid of the right wing. Whether Stephen Miller does it, whether General Kelly doesn't steer him in the right direction and just lets it happen, I don't know. But it's getting very, very difficult. You know, my hope has always been that Senator McConnell and Leader Ryan would see, knowing what they know about the president, that they would step up to the plate themselves. But they're afraid to, too, I think, or at least reluctant to. I wouldn't characterize it as afraid. But they are reluctant. Leader McConnell has said publicly that he doesn't know what the president thinks and has told me repeatedly I should negotiate with Trump. Yes. We did not reach agreement. We came close to the parameters of an agreement. No, I heard from the first call came from the president about the three weeks, which was news to me. Well, you have to ask people who know the White House better than me. All I know is it's next to impossible to negotiate when the position keeps changing and changing and changing. Yes. Second, when you sit with the president, this is the second or third time I've done this on an agreement, you can see he really wants to do it. But then, a few hours later, because of the right-wing pressure, he backs off. And what I'd like to know is who in the White House is a sort of moderating force who says, this is a good thing for you and the country, and your party, go for it. Don't let these people back you up. I don't see anyone in the White House doing that. Next. Yes. Look. Well, first of all, Dreamers, unlike other issues, has huge bipartisan support. It's not something, you know, it's not like 2013 where Ted Cruz had his own view, but it's was partisan and not popular. This is very popular. But second, this is the first time we've had one party control all three parts of the government. And the American people know that it's their responsibility to reach out and compromise to get things done. There's a lot of feeling in the country that the White House is incapable of really leading the country. And when something like this happens, it exacerbates that view.
If negotiating with the president is like negotiating with Jell-O, as you said, then how are you going to get it done? And
well,
are you willing to go back to the White House?
Look, any time I suggested last night on the floor and this morning on the floor that the president call the four of us back today and try to get something done. It's still very, very hard, given the past history and what I've said, but you always got to be willing to try, and I am. Thank you. Last one, CNN back there. Yelling isn't going to get your calls on.
Just talk a little bit about the endgame. Do you think Democrats have a stomach
for a shutdown
that lasts a week, 2 weeks, 2 months?
I think the Americans.
That Republicans, if you hold out long enough, will say, okay, we'll take the game and set
deal. There are various compromises being bandied about. They're bandied about with far more serious today than they were yesterday by the Republican side. And I'm always willing to listen to compromises that are how to get this done. But at this point, we feel very, very strongly about the issues, not just Dreamers, but opioids, pensions, not funding the military on a CR basis. And we feel the American people are on our side.
Yo, Mo B, man, drop that shit. Throw y'all fingers up. Just down. Tell me, baby, are you lonely? Don't want to rush out to help you if you're only. Let me touch it for wrong love, tell me. Cause I get caught up in the life I live in hell. See, I never thought I'd see the day when I would calm down. You ain't heard, I've been on the clown and get around. That's my word, see you walking and you're looking good. Yes, indeed, got a body like a sex thing. You're killing me with your attitude to match, right? Don't be phony, cause I hate it when you act like. You don't know me, I've been stressing in the spotlight. I want the fame, but the industry's a lot like a crap game, ain't no time for commitment. I gotta go, can't be with you every minute, Nick. Another show, and even though I'm known for my one night stand. Look here, I wanna be an honest man, but temptation's gone. Enough talking, you want me to leave, I get to walk and see you later, cause baby I'm a player, and all I heard was...
give them the visa.
Of Central Park, there will be speakers, including politicians, activists,
some celebrities and surprise guests, and then the march will get underway around 1 p.m. They'll march down to 43rd Street, all this wrapping up in the mid-afternoon. Right?
All right, Alex Marquardt in New York. Thank you so much. All right, let's go west, my friends, to Chicago. Ryan Young is there. Ryan, what's happening?
And part of the program really just got on the way here, and you can see the large crowds that have already started to show up here. Last year, over 200,000 people were here. You can see it stretching all the way back in the direction there. People said they wanted to be here because they wanted to show, they wanted change. They wanted to see change happen over some time. So if you were here last year, you told me, what brought you back out here for a second year in a row?
My daughter's future. I think it was so awesome that last year everybody got to come together, and not just for their own reasons, but for the fact that everybody can come together and celebrate those, no matter how you feel. And so I think that really motivated us to come back this year.
What do you want your daughter to experience in terms of the future? Because I know a lot of people are talking about junior bias, talking about changing. What would you like to see change in the country?
I would just like her to know that she has endless possibilities and that she's safe, and that when women and men work together, that we can create a great community. A wonderful country.
There's been a lot of conversation about the Me Too movement. How has that impacted you as being a young person seeing this?
I think it's hard sometimes for our generation to really comprehend something as serious as cases, especially not just in Hollywood, but everywhere. But I think it's important for our generation to understand that we cannot be okay with this anymore, and that we need to stand up and finally change the views and what is right and what we will tolerate.
Thank you so much for sharing this.
Well, yeah. It will happen. It's happening.
If you see, the crowd is energized. So we're right in the middle of all this. Once again, the crowd is still gathering. We have another hour or so before we can start marching towards the Federal Plaza. Right now we have performers on stage. So Fred, a lot of energy, a lot of people showing up. So it looks like the numbers are a little down from last year. But people keep saying more people are starting to march this way.
You're listening to The Marty Smith Show.
Thank you. west side, so you know the road will bow down to no man. Say what you say, but give me that bomb beat from Drake. Let me serenade the streets of L.A. From Oakland to Sacktown, the Bay Area and back down. Cali is where they put they Mac down. Give me love.
Able to smile through all this bullshit.